Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, everything related to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. I really appreciate you sharing it with your friends and family. We're well over a million listeners here in the United States and well over a quarter million overseas, and that's growing. You know what, folks? The end of tax season is just around the corner. The question is, how do we reduce our taxes and prepare for that tax burden in 2026? I mean, things like avoiding audits, issues like fraud, identity theft are big things. You know, hey, what can you write off? Or is there any cool things you can write off? And then, you know what about crypto, cannabis, real estate, AI? What do you need to know when it comes to your taxes? And that's why we have Zach Gordon today. He's a CPA. He's been there for 20 years. He's a founder of Red 5 Services, specialized in accounting tax services. He worked in a large CPA firm, private equity. He had tech startup founder. He serves on multiple boards. I mean, he just loves making complex financial topics simple and approachable so business can focus on growing while avoiding troubles with the IRS and regulators, which is really, really, really important. Zach, I want to welcome you to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. Man, I hope I live up to the expectations in that intro. I'd love to meet that guy.
Well, you know, I'll just say this. When our listeners got a hold of what you're going to talk about, and we got so many people responded, what about this? What about that? Taxes are that one time a year thing, like going to the dentist.
That's a fair way to put it. I would hope to be a little less painful than that. You know, that's just maybe a 2% less painful.
Well, the problem is, you know, when you have 7-8 million words in the tax code, people just don't know what they don't know. And the reality is a lot of times they're paying more than they expect or even thought they were, just because they didn't know how things worked.
Education goes so far on that front. And just a simple conversation becomes a not so simple, but usually a very enlightening one pretty quickly.
You know what? I had a conversation with somebody just last week, and they were supposed to take their required minimum distribution. They thought it'd be okay if they were a little bit late. It wouldn't be that big of a deal. But then, you know what? They got hit with a $10,000 25% penalty, the interest and all that kind of stuff. And that was a pretty brutal reality.
Delves in the details with all of those things. So as you so succinctly put it, not knowing these things can become a major issue.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know what? You've heard of an inherited IRA. Mm-hmm. You know, all the stuff that got grandfathered in if you inherited something prior to 2019 or 2020. One person heard that they didn't have to take a required minimum distribution for an inherited IRA, but that was for after 2020. Mm-hmm. And they haven't been taking an inherited IRA required minimum distribution for 5 whole years.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
And they just, you know, and it's funny because, you know, the IRS is behind. They didn't think it's going to happen, but they got the letter. And now they have to amend 5 years worth of tax returns, pay penalties, interest, and all that stuff. And it's hurtful. So that's why you're here, because people just don't know what they don't know. But let's start by talking about, I would like to just start, I was going to talk about reducing things first, but let's just start talking about how to avoid audits.
That's, you know, getting audited, obviously, there's a lot of fear around that. And I can't tell you how many of those conversations I'll have in any given year. Just, you know, if I do this, what risk is associated with that? How, you know, does this automatically trigger an audit? And just to back up even a little bit, just to very high level explain how, you know, what happens after you submit a tax return. So believe it or not, the government knows almost everything you're going to send to them anyway. So whether by W-2, 1099s, if you get a K-1, the government already has that and they've built up a file, for lack of a better term, on what your return should look like. And obviously there's little things that they don't know, and we can get into tax credits. We can talk, on that side of the table. But for the most part, they have a pretty good idea of what should come in. So when you submit your tax return, they want to make sure your name, your tax ID is right. And when we start talking about ID theft and fraud and that stuff, that's a part of the conversation as well. But they do some pretty simple checks just to make sure, you sent in the digital piece of paper and it matches what they have. Then they start getting into, okay, did you have a W-2? Yes. Yeah, the numbers match. Great, moving on. And the same thing with 1099, some of the other things that you list out there. If you make a mistake or if something's omitted, that's a nice easy way just to get a notice saying, oh, we noticed that you should have had $111,000 for this line and you reported 41,000. Like, all right, let's make up that difference and see what happened. Where it gets a little bit more complicated is if you're claiming credits that you shouldn't. Based on profiles, probabilities, they have all these formulations on their side that, if you're going down that road and an earned income credit is a big one that pretty much triggers every year. There's a few of those things that they'll look out for. There's also sort of a, call it a dirty dozen type of list, where there's just significant items that they trigger every year that they know just from monitoring things like social media. I mean, they watch TikTok too. They see Instagram reels just the same as we do, and they have people monitoring for these types of things. So
So
they'll
when you say the Dirty Dozen and people are monitoring the room, they're monitoring for those people who are promoting a specific tax strategy.
Correct.
Okay, so it might be something that's been going on for a number of years, but it's gotten so big that the IRS is starting to take a look at it, and some of the people who are promoting it are taking advantage of the strategy and inflating what you can do and inflating what you can do on your tax return. Is
That
that
is perfectly said. And I'll, without naming names or getting too not to call anybody out, but there's a certain tax strategy, as you sort of alluded to, where you put real estate into a trust, and then via the trust, then you take a distribution, and then from that distribution, you're stacking basically.
okay.
And then you get the depreciation on the real estate side, which is routed from the trust to then you personally, plus you get any distributions that are then tax-free because it lives in the trust. As you said, things that may have been either okay or overlooked or just not a priority in prior years, now all of a sudden because it's getting promoted and again, they watch these things too. It gets to a certain point where they just can't, at scale, let it go any further.
I understand that. And then sometimes what people need to understand is some of these things, they might be 3 or 4 years down the road before the IRS gets to it, but they're
Correct.
going to go look back 3 or 4
Oh,
years.
statute of
And
limitations is a funny thing.
well, isn't it like for taxes, is it how long is the statute of limentations?
Oh, 7 years.
7 years. Okay.
Unless
So
you commit some sort of fraud, and then it's,
then it's a lot longer.
Yeah.
So the big part about it is, make sure you're talking with somebody like Zach, especially when it comes to these things, these programs that people have, so they can make sure it actually follows the tax codes. Because I've seen some things where some people say you're getting five times that for deduction, and the IRS only allows three, or they're saying you're getting it on 50% of your income, but it's only 25%. And in preparation for this, I talked to a number of people who said, yeah, that was a really expensive thing because I had to pay 5 years worth of interest back to the franchise tax board and here in California, as well as for the IRS. And that was actually kind of more expensive than the game.
That back of napkin math can add up pretty quick. And just it's a little cliche, but it holds true, especially with taxes. If it sounds too good to be true, it almost certainly is. And there's just every year there's a new one of these tax products being offered, or there's a new the new it thing, whatever it might be. And do your homework, speak to professionals, trust your instincts. If it's too easy, if it sounds too good to be true, if there's that little voice in the back of your head like, whoa, what's, where's the downside here?
Oh, yeah.
There almost certainly is.
That is the best aha. Talk to a professional. Talk to a CPA who knows the tax code, how it works, how it should work. Again, I think that's also important to point out here that somebody like Zach has experience with crypto, cannabis, AI, many other things. Sometimes you have CPAs, all they do is just, no offense, they're really nice people, but they put the right numbers in the right boxes, and they don't
Which
provide.
there's value for that, obviously, but you
Yeah,
know.
there is. But there's also a different value when you have somebody who's got experience and understand how things should work, what a legitimate strategy would be, and how it would work, and how the different tax codes are put together in order to make that strategy work properly.
And honestly, from my perspective, that's the fun of this. It's building a relationship with someone, and it's figuring out, you know, what do they actually want to do, and how. As it goes beyond just putting numbers in the right box, which is obviously important and a necessary skill. And you know, we can talk about the AI conversation, how much longer do we really need to do the form side to this, but you know, building that relationship, that trust, and working together to find the right answers, and working with someone like yourself, yeah, putting all those pieces together really makes a big difference. And it's why we get up in the morning. It allows you to use your brain for something.
So here's the next thing. If you get audited, you get that letter in the mail that says, hey, you've got $100,000 in deductions. We don't think these are legitimate deductions. Hey, you, and the form says you owe us this much money. What should somebody do if they get something like that?
Don't panic. It sounds silly, but seriously, I cannot tell you how many late night or early morning calls, texts, emails I've gotten, all caps, like, you know, fire drill. It take a breath. It's going to be okay. There's almost always a logical explanation and a straight path forward. So
Okay. No, I
part of
actually
this.
say that, and the reason why I'm saying that is because I've got about 30 emails that says I got this letter and I'm freaking out.
Yep.
And you know, I'm just going to talk from my own experience. I got a letter like that and I gave it to my tax person and she wrote the little letter and says these are legitimate here. And then we got this letter that says, oh, you're okay. Bye. And that was it. Now,
Exactly.
I also heard people, well, they just thought, okay, I owe this money, so I'm going to pay it. And not even think twice about it. What's the downside of that?
There's always the chance that you don't actually owe that money. That it could legitimately just be an oversight, system error, misunderstanding of how things were presented. There's any no number of opportunities there that, you know, you could certainly be right. The IRS is certainly not infallible by any stretch, and I say that with all love and respect for our great institutions, of course, assuming they're listening as they should be. But no. In all seriousness, some of this comes to preparation. So I can tell, you know, I've been on the client side to this, obviously, and on, you know, the personal side of, you know, no one's immune from getting letters from any authority, of course. But having everything properly documented is a big deal going in. So knowing that every number that goes on a tax return has the appropriate piece of paper, where, well, digital anyway, that says this is how we got to this number. So if you can, if they question anything on a tax return, you come in prepared. So if, whether it's in person, whether it's done completely through portals and the rest, just knowing that you have the confidence that, all right, we know that we followed these rules to get to this answer. This is how we got there. Now that, you know, it's certainly their right to question methodology and to, you know, have that conversation, and, you know, devil's in the details on that as well. But preparation is a big deal. Having everything properly documented is a really big deal. If you talk to me long enough, you're going to hear that word
I
documentation
agree
150,000 times. There's no question about it.
with it. Hey, with that, we're going to talk documentation, but no, folks, we'll sit with us. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve and Zach Gordon. So be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthy or happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything on the sun relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. I want to thank you and appreciate you for sharing it with your friends and family. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying stories of helpful insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss a show. Check out a few. It's at AM FM 247, UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. And you can also follow us on the Facebook page at Saving with Steve Sexton. Go to the Insiders Club, get guest gifts, replays. You're definitely going to want to look at this episode again. And the reason why I say that is there's going to be so many little ahas that you're just going to go, oh, I need, you know, it. I always listen to these, especially with the taxes. I always come back and go, oh, I didn't know that. So, Zachary, again, thanks for being here. I would like to talk, one of the big topics for our listeners is fraud and identity theft when it comes to doing your taxes. It's a big thing. Many people get taken advantage of. Some people try and file and they find out somebody already filed for them. Some people find out that they've got to return money that they didn't even know they filed on. So help us understand what's going on with the fraud that takes place and the identity theft.
Yeah, and you hit some of those points on the head that it can be scary. And as someone who hits the proverbial button to submit to various authorities, when it kicks back, you know, we get a nice little red arrow there that says there's a problem here. And we notice it at scale starting during COVID. So there were actually entire criminal rings set up that would just find your name, your social security number and address, and then they're able to put all manner of information down on a fraudulent tax return, submit it, and then it takes so long to unwind that a lot of these rings just disappear once they've gone through an entire tax season cycle. So it's it is, frankly, it can be very scary.
So let me just kind of make sure everybody gets that. So what you're saying is there's whole rings of people that are stealing people's financial, social security number, birthday and all that stuff. That's enough for them to actually file a fake tax return, receive the refund, and be gone before anybody knows.
Correct.
And then you're filing your tax return, and then you find out that, hey, you already filed it. What's going on? And by the way, that isn't legitimate, so I want my money back from the IRS.
Yeah, basically, and then we have to go through a whole process to unwind that.
Okay, let's talk about that too, please.
Yeah, so it's you get that message back, you get indicated that somebody's filed a return on your behalf, and it frankly takes moments to figure out that this was fraud. This is not a system error. This is not a user error type of thing. This is someone in essence stole your identity and submitted something on your behalf. Well, first and foremost, you need to alert the authorities. And unfortunately, this has happened so often, it's become a bit of a standardized process. It's unfortunate to say that, but that's the reality of the world that we live in now. So it's reaching the authorities where we can tell that this has been done. Again, it's a hotline now, which...
Oh, really? Now, are you just calling the police? You calling the IRS?
No, no, no. So it's going straight to the IRS and any other taxing authorities that would have received a return from whichever party this is, alerting them that, I'm attesting to the fact that I did not file this. Basically, they're going to tell you, please put together the real return, and we're going to have to submit it via paper file to a specific desk that reviews these things. And you end up not on an audit list, but you end up on in essence, like a higher security level list.
Like a watch list.
I was trying to be careful with that
Well, I
terminology,
understand
but
it, but it is what it is. You know,
it
they're
is.
watching out. They want to see if there's anything else coming there.
Correct.
The
If anybody's watching, let's be honest. But no, that's the good kind of watch list, because they want to make sure that as a taxpayer, you're not being you're not being taken advantage of, they're not being taken advantage of, and there's no more funny business in the future. So that sort of leads us into the conversation of what can you do? So, I think quite a few people are familiar with what is two-factor authentication. So for a lot of states, they have mandated that you have to show proof of identification before you can file that tax return. Just again, as a CPA practitioner, it's good practice for us to do the same. Especially anytime we're taking on new clients, we just want that extra level of security. Either way, we'll ask for updated IDs, especially even for people we've known for years, but it's good practice. That's the first step. There's also, you can request a PIN. So 4 digits, 6 digits, there's, various PINs that you can request. So it'll come straight from that government resource, and they will not accept a return unless they get the number they gave you back. And it's a little old school how they do it. You'll get the postcard or the letter that says, thank you for requesting, your numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that sort of thing. It's those levels of precautions that matter. And then, beyond that, there's sort of the regular ID protection processes that you can go through. And it doesn't hurt to make sure that you're not clicking on any links that you don't recognize. You should never send your personally identifiable information, so name, social security number, tax ID number, etc., over just open email. Be careful of open Wi-Fi, et cetera, just the usual good practices. But at a minimum, I highly recommend everyone get that PIN and make sure if you're filing, you have your identification ready and submit that as well. It's just those extra tedious steps can save you a whole lot of heartache and frankly save me a whole bunch of phone calls.
So here's a couple questions.
Shoot.
Will the IRS ever call you? Will the IRS ever email you?
No. And that is a painstaking conversation, because why won't you accept email? But no, they operate, they will only accept things via fax for the most part, and portals that they operate and control themselves, and notices. It's letters. That's how they communicate.
Okay, no, that's perfect. It's important to know, especially when you're dealing with, you know what, I've been, well, we've actually had people send us the letters that they've, not the letters, but their emails that they've received. And sometimes people won't even look at the email address and realize if they look at the email address and see who the email address actually is, it's actually someplace overseas. And or it has a weird, you know, it's not the IRS.
Or it'll be IRS.com or something like that, which
It's
should
not
be the
irs.gov,
right.
or they will see a IRS identifier when somebody calls, and they don't call. So.
No, that they will never they will never ever call you unless you tell them to call you at a specific time. Then they will. But that's the only time they will ever pick up the phone to call you specifically. And they will never ask for a gift card, crypto. They'll never ask you for Bitcoin, anything like that. The only payments they accept are check that they mail in, and they're stopping that as well shortly. And they have two different payment portals depending on whether you're a business or whether you're an individual taxpayer. That's it.
Okay, and geez, I just had this. I just, oh, I'm sorry. I'll come back to that one, but I was just going to ask about one other thing, but that's okay. So let's start talking about, hey, how do we reduce our tax burden in 2026?
Well, the like all great tax questions, the answer is it depends. I say that sort of joking because that is the sort of the go-to for sure. But if we're being a little more serious, there's some of the more well-known ones. So it's like a if you work from home and you have dedicated space specifically for working, you can take the home office deduction. Now, big asterisk on that, it needs to be dedicated space. So it gets very murky if you're using the dining room table or if you have, part of the bedroom. It gets very murky at that point. So it's dedicated space. For example, I work from home quite a bit, as I'm sure you can tell from the background here. This is a dedicated office. We don't use it for anything else other than my ridiculous multiple screen setup and all the rest. But being able to then properly document that, so you know what your rent payments or your mortgage payments are, allocate utilities and anything specifically there. That's part of a questionnaire that we would have you fill out, so that we can, assuming we say yes, make sure that we're utilizing that properly.
So
That's one that.
no problem. Here's the question. What is the maximum percentage of one's home that they could use for an office?
That's a very good question, and I think well, if you're in a small apartment, I think that question's answered very differently than if you're in a larger two-story home where it's a little more difficult to justify that space. So I think at the end of the day, it's what you can prove, it's what you can document, it's what you can show that you're actually using for that proper office space.
So in other words, if you've got a 500 square foot room and that's being used for your office and has all your stuff, you're fine. And then
Correct.
it's that percentage of the house that you're able to do things like depreciate, write off that percentage of electricity and all that kind of
Correct.
stuff. Okay.
Correct.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
And that's all. And those are the questions that we would absolutely ask you up front. And then don't worry about them. We'll handle the math on the back end. But we just want to know what can we reasonably allocate. I will, again, put the big asterisk. This is an area where if you get a little, you try to juice the numbers a little bit, it will stand out, and that is an area that can be a red flag from whether the IRS or state authority, especially the state of California, our friends over there. This is one of those areas that is very much of interest for sure.
No, I understand. People push the limit all the time. So it's just what it is. Hey, folks.
Human nature is a funny thing.
We're going to talk about reducing that tax burden. Stick with us. We'll be right back with more Zach Gordon's Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show. Again, I just want to thank you for sharing us with your friends and family. We've got Zachary Gordon, CPA. He's talking about reducing tax burdens. He just finished talking about an office in the home. Okay. And you know what? Let's talk about a few other things that people can do to reduce their tax burden here in 2026.
For sure. And I think it's interesting that you said 2026 because timing is everything. The worst time to talk about tax planning is after the end of the year. So this is one of the, it sounds silly, but it honestly, like it is a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'm just going to say this. There's many people who emailed in to us, is there anything I could do for 2025? And well, make an IRA contribution.
I was literally just going to say the only, that's really about it. Like that, if you qualify to even get that sort of deduction as well, which is another big old caveat. But communication is key, and doing it in the tax year is a really big deal. So making sure you have the right relationships with the CPAs, the tax practitioners, the advisors in the year, and having a plan at the end of the day. So this, as we said at the jump, this isn't just about putting numbers in a box, but it's the story behind them. It's not being a historian, it's being forward-looking. And that, I can tell you beyond a reasonable doubt, that that's the biggest part of this, is having regular communications. I know from our side, if we're not having quarterly discussions, and that can be in fi a 15-minute, like, hey, how's the family? How you doing? What's new? Or it can become much more substantive, where we're building out proprietary tax models, and you own this business. It looks like it's going to perform like this. What do we need to do to make sure that we're managing for the tax liability?
So here's a question for you. How important is it for not only to have your CPA there, but your financial advisor and maybe your will and trust attorney or tax attorney to be involved in the discussion to help with reducing, eliminating taxation?
It's everything. If you're operating in silos, if you and I aren't speaking, then we are going in potentially in two different directions, and we're not aligned. And at the end of the day, as a taxpayer, that's, I don't want to say that's where you lose, because want to be careful with those words, but that's where you're leaving opportunities on the table. So good communication across the board, having a cohesive plan, understanding, okay, these are the assets that we have, this is the potential tax liability. Like, hey, this is where, as an advisor, this is where your comfort level is. This is what you're seeing from my side. These are the potential effects, and how do we manage, and how do we utilize the tax code as efficiently as possible? And then from the estates and trust side, man, that's a whole conversation in its own right, of potential efficiencies, and it needs to be a flywheel at the end of the day.
Well, what I was going to say is one of the things that I heard when I went to a tax thing, and the gentleman said, he goes, you know what? It's just as important to have a tax allocation like an investment allocation, because you're going to make so much money. If you don't have your tax allocation right, you've got money going out the back door. So, for example, hey, you made 10%, but if you're paying 30% in taxes, you're getting 7. But if that 30% taxes turns to 15, you're at 8.5. That's more money in your pocket. Having that CPA, having that financial advisor, and having more, most importantly, having that estate person there makes all the difference in the world, because you can have people talking about all these specialists talking about your situation, and you can say, you know what, it's going to work great with this person, but this one, not so good, and here's why. So that having that conversation, I'm just going to say, is very important, and it's one of the things I heard that it just went, oh my God, never forgot it.
Agreed. And just to add to that, if you need to make estimated tax payments every quarter, if you qualify in that regard, you want to get that as close as possible to what the real tax liability is going to be, because any nickel above that is an interest-free loan to the government, which, again, we want to pay the right amount. I don't know if we're in the business of giving free loans to anybody, even the government.
Well, I think a lot of people don't look at that the right way. Well, some people look at it like, hey, you know, I'm overpaying $300 or $400 a month. That's what, $3,500 to $5,000. But what you need to think about is you just paid somebody, you've earned nothing, you got to fill out a form, and you're going to get it back sometime in April or May. Okay. So how does that really benefit you? If you have more money in your pocket every single month, you can invest, you can grow it, you can pay those bills down. That's less debt, that's more in your 401k, all sorts of things. So
Exactly.
that's the thing I was looking at. So let's keep talking about how can we reduce our tax burden in 2026.
So another one where it can be a little bit invisible, and it can be a slippery slope at the same time, but business use of vehicles, unreimbursed business expenses, which, I'll highlight that as a sort of direct situation, they The last time that they updated the tax code, they sort of eliminated that unless you have an actual business yourself. So if you have that personal LLC that you use for consulting work, you have a e-commerce business, that side hustle, or maybe it is your day job, be mindful of any business expenses that you've put on a personal credit card, on a personal, from a personal bank account. We do like to make sure we don't do that as much as possible, just because commingling becomes a sticky situation for sure. But if you do have that business and operating, it's an area again of interest for sure. You want to make sure you're not leaving anything on the table on that front. So that is kind of a big deal. I think we touched on retirement contributions a little bit. But it's a big one. So making sure you have an IRA set up, you're maxing out 401ks. Again, these all sound like cliches, but there's plenty of people who still don't go down that road. And you're investing in yourself at the end of the day, and you're getting a tax benefit for it. So it seems like a win-win to me.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. So one question that came up, and it's just on the you have these solo 401s, self-employed IRAs, and it comes into and you have these owner, I want to call them they're owner qualified plans of a business. So when it comes to taking that required minimum distribution, okay, even though they still might be working for that business, do they still have to take that required minimum distribution because they're list they are the owner?
Oh, that's another one of those lovely devil in the details type of situations. And yeah, I mean that's a potential landmine you can step on if you're not being very mindful of those details. So yeah, that's a very tricky situation. I mean if you're in the plan, if you're still checking that particular box, you need to take them.
Okay,
So,
perfect.
unfortunately, that's one of those simple, not so simple situations where it's there's again that piece of paper that says you need to follow these rules. I think there's you can do your best to be proactive there and try to make sure that you're not getting tripped up by what logically doesn't make sense. But we're not living in a world of logic. We're living in a world of taxes.
Well, no, I understand that. You hear certain things all the time. If you're still working there, you don't have to take a requirement of distribution if you're contributing to a plan. But if you're an owner, you might still be working there, but it's a different story.
Exactly
So
right.
that's that gets people messed up. So now let's start talking about what everybody wants to hear about is those unexpected tax write-offs that people can write off.
Oh man, that's a fun one. Let me spin this around a little bit. What type of questions on that front do you usually run into? Because I think there's a lot of avenues we could take this conversation.
Okay, let's go straight to the ones where the doctor says you need to have a certain item. Jacuzzi, Peloton.
Man.
you know, I just one of my friends had an ACL surgery and they had some complications, and one of the doctors says, "Hey, you need to get an exercise bike and start riding." And basically that was the prescription. Another one has these back spasms, and the doctor recommended that they spend some time in a jacuzzi next to the massaging jets to reduce that type. So they got a prescription. So how legit are things like that?
Oh, I love those stories, and I had a couple chambered that are a little more spicy than that with the McLaren F1.
Okay, please spill.
Man, but to address yours first, if there is a doctor's note, I think we can get comfortable with something like that. It where it becomes the you bought the jacuzzi first and then you're scrambling for the note and there's no history of medical issues and just if it looks a little fishy, then it becomes much more difficult to justify. I think if we're looking at the logic of any specific case, we have the right documentation, we have the history, you can get comfortable with that. Now, depending on your individual tax situation, is that even worth going down that road? Are you actually going to get anything back for it just because there are limitations on those medical deductions that you can take. So that's a whole it depends type of answer, and something that we would legitimately want to map out and see, is it worth the effort? Is it worth the economics here that we'll get back?
Well, great. Okay, so let's go in a little flip here. We have somebody who works out of the house, sees clients at the house. What about writing off a lawn service to make sure the house looks nice?
Boy, is that sticky.
That's why I'm asking, because
Yeah, no, not
I heard it before, and I was like, wow, that I wouldn't do that, but okay.
it comes down, risk tolerance is a big deal. And no, I mean, you see plenty of I know by me here in New York, we have a local dentist who uses the one half of their home basically as the dental practice, and they live in the suite up above, that type of thing. And as far as I'm aware, they do all the landscaping and such, they do write off. I think you can get there. Again, it's documentation. It's showing that actually there is a particular business purpose. We see clients at the house. You can get there.
Well, I understand that. I'd be pretty scary walking to a dentist's house and you see the grass overgrown.
Of
That
course.
you walk in, you're like, gosh, this is like, they're not touching my mouth. No, I totally get that. So, hey, folks, look, we're having fun learning about taxes. Stick with us. We'll be right back with more Zach Gordon and Steve Sexton.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
So folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. Hey, we're talking about the ins and outs of money. We've got Zachary Gordon. We got a lot to talk about here in the next 10, 12 minutes. So you know what? Let's just kind of go right to AI. What's the big thing people should know about AI when it comes to taxes and taxation?
All I can, first and foremost, please don't use AI to prepare your tax return. And I don't say that to save my job or anything like that. I say it because just do not send anything to a taxing authority that you have not had properly prepared. I've had multiple people come in. The questions come up. Why should I pay you instead of, just going to ChatGPT, here's my information, here's my financials, and go. And for the record, it was not in a confrontational way. It's just a curiosity sort of thing. And I can tell you, one, AI is not there yet. It's just from a pure logic standpoint, I would not trust it to do that. And two, you really do need a professional involved with your taxes. So whether that's utilizing the right software with an AI assistant, or or going to a firm and having it done, call it the old-fashioned human way. It makes all the difference, and from a personal liability standpoint, from just a proper preparation standpoint, it really does matter. So please don't do that. Secondly, be very careful what you put into any sort of, whether it's ChatGPT or Claude or any of the fun ones out there. One, never put your social security number in there. Two, be very careful what financial information you put in there. And three, be really careful if you ask for tax advice, you don't know what you're going to get back. And I will give a great, carefully worded anecdote here. Had a now former client go to ChatGPT. They had a very significant financial event that they did not want to pay taxes on. So basically, they went through all the prompts. They asked ChatGPT. Basically, they sent me the whole thing, in essence, all the prompts and the back and forth with ChatGPT. In essence, saying I made X amount of dollars and I don't want to pay tax. Find the loophole basically to get it to that point. And a very long story short, ChatGPT made up a section of the tax code that said that they could do that. Because at the end of the day, it's an LLM, it's a large language model, and what it wants to do is give the answer that you're looking for based on all those different prompts. So it's like, oh, subsection XYZ123 says that you don't have to pay tax on this type of transaction. They sent that to me and basically argued with, what numbers we had come up with. And it took about a quarter of a second to do the research. Like, no, this isn't real. It doesn't exist. And
Well,
it's not great.
actually,
So,
we've heard the same thing in the legal field,
yes.
where they come up with cases that don't exist, that never existed. In fact, there's been a number of attorneys that have gotten sanctions by judges, which are fines for submitting stuff that they knew it was AI because these cases didn't exist.
There's been
And they
attorneys
actually had their
disbarred for that.
license challenged too.
So
So.
it's for as great as these tools are, and we've built our own proprietary software utilizing, these AI platforms as a baseline, and it's created efficiencies we couldn't even imagine before. But there's a line, because obviously as professionals, we know the parameters that need to be followed here, and then we hand it off to the proper technology professionals to take it from there. So there's myriad use cases on that front. Again, the best advice here is just be careful. It's the same thing with going to TikTok or Instagram for your tax advice. Just take it as entertainment and feel free to ask the question, but just know that you should have some skepticism.
No, I agree. It's almost okay, so now we finished AI. Crypto is a big thing.
Yes.
Many people buy the coins, hold their own wallet, all that kind of stuff, do it themselves. But, how is it, crypto different from just doing regular taxes for dividends, capital gains, and stuff like that?
That's a whole hour-long dissertation in its own right, and I've taught that class if anyone ever wants to have that fun. But long story short, the level of risk and volatility with crypto, I think, is very well established. But that's just touching the surface. So first and foremost, if you haven't been educated, if you're not familiar with this space, I would recommend extreme caution. This is very much devil's in the details because the reporting standards are nowhere near what they are for your more traditional trading, for example. So at its simplest level, it is you have your cost basis of X, you sell it for Y, and either you have your capital gain or your capital loss that you can utilize. That does get reported the same as it would any sort of traditional trade. However, the standard on that reporting is, let's be generous and say, a work in progress. So from a standardization standpoint, every year the IRS seems to be punting a little bit further, and the FAQs are still very unclear in that regard. So I can tell you that there's still quite a bit of gray area. A very quick example, a taxable event. So where you have to pay tax for crypto is defined as any purchase or sale, which makes lots of logical sense, but also exchanging. So anytime you're going from Bitcoin to Ethereum or a stable coin like USDC, for example, to Bitcoin, just to keep it simple, that is a taxable event. So whatever the difference in the value there from when you bought one type of crypto to the next, that difference there, you theoretically have to pay tax on. And those are all the little things that you need to manage. Now, the complication is if you have multiple wallets, for example, and you're moving your own crypto from one wallet to another, that is not a taxable event because it's your asset that you're just putting from here to there. It's the same as if you're moving from Schwab to Fidelity, that type of thing. Where it becomes a real issue is tracking. So it's very easy to mix up those types of transactions, and you could potentially owe a lot of tax that, maybe you shouldn't, and vice versa. It's very easy to miss things. Very quick example, we had an iBanker who designed an algorithm. He did this rapid trading type of infrastructure, which really cool. However, he did not identify the transactions. And long story short, we found over $1 million in potential tax liabilities that he shouldn't pay because of the miscoding of all those transactions. So that's obviously a very extreme example, but for as fun as crypto can be, and I have all those stories, and it's really cool, and you see certain things where people can really have extreme gains. There's also the possibility for losses and the possibility for just things falling through the cracks. So once again, devil's in the details. Make sure you work with a professional who has experience in this space. And again, as I said, just be very careful.
Yeah, I heard that. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask that, because I've heard people who went with their old CPA who didn't know, and it got them big bills. And then when they went to a new CPA who understood, they amended those big bills. So it's very, very important why go through all that.
And the last thing on the crypto side, just because this is an area that gets overlooked quite a bit, on the front page of your 1040, there's a little almost invisible question that says, in essence, did you transact with crypto, digital assets at any point during the year? If and that could be staking rewards, that could be just you open up a Coinbase account and you get the free dollar of stablecoin, whatever it might be. Check yes. Even if you're unsure, please check that box, because if you say no, that opens the door to all sorts of other potential issues in the future.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Okay, so let's talk about cannabis. How does that work? What are the issues that people need to be concerned about?
Still, it's technically federally illegal at this point. There's a whole code subsection within the Internal Revenue Code that basically says that you cannot take any deductions. It's because it's a Schedule One narcotic, it's on the naughty list, long story short. So another one of those industries that's fun and interesting and certainly has its unique aspects, and we'll put it there. But ex please use extreme caution when getting involved in that industry. It's very easy to frankly lose money for sure because of the compliance requirements and the sort of the specifications that are required to properly operate. On the other side, there's a possibility for what we call phantom income. So, because of the unique aspect of the tax code, and because you're not allowed to take tax deductions for any involvement you have in that industry, in essence, you're paying maximum tax levels on the gross profit of the company instead of the taxable income, the net income of that operation. So you're leaving a whole lot of potential deductions on the table. And again, we call that phantom income because technically, your financial statements say, $100,000. Your taxable income says, oh no, it's 200,000. That's a
Oh,
slight
you
issue.
can't write off anything. That's horrible.
Exactly. That'll change in the near future, but not as near as I think people think.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know what? We've got about a minute and a half left. I'd like to leave some time for you to share what you're doing with people, how you're helping people, how people can get a hold of you, and stuff like that. So, if you would, please do so, Zachary.
No, Steve, I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, so if anyone wants to reach out, I'm always happy to have a conversation. The website is red5services.com. I'm Zach at red5services.com if you want to send an email directly. I'm on social media at Zach Gordon CPA. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. I would love to highlight a nonprofit organization that is just doing fantastic work out
Please.
there. It's called Heroes United. It's heroes-united.org. They're doing awesome work. So the basic idea is getting veterans who've served co in combat, getting them back together, reuniting squads that haven't seen each other in years potentially, and as part of treatment for things like PTSD and other post-combat issues that can come up, getting them together, sending them to a place where they can take that breath, actually reset themselves. We send them on adventures. So, for example, we reunited a squad, hadn't seen each other in almost 20 years, sent them to Yellowstone, had guided tours, fishing. They stayed at a ranch, like the all expenses paid. Like it was a
That's
really
cool.
big deal. as well as helping to with therapy, with job searches, doing as much as we can to help those who've served our country. So it's a big deal.
I just, oh, no, I th it sounds like a great big deal. If you would, please make sure our PR team has that link to there so we can share it with all of
Of
our
course.
listeners, and hopefully people will donate to support that cause. So, yeah. Hey,
I couldn't be
Zachary.
more proud of anything we've talked about. That's without a doubt the thing I'm most proud of.
That's awesome. Our time's up for today. I want to thank you for being here. There's like tons of ahas. If you're listening now, you want to go to the recording multiple times because there's a lot of little things that you might miss that you might go, oh, this is going to save me some money. So, Zachary, thank you so much for being with us today. Look forward to possibly having you back in the future because you're really good at this. And,
Oh,
folks, stick with us. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthy or happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
So folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I want to thank you for sharing us with your friends and family and associates. Again, all the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, AM/FM 247, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Again, you can also join us at Saving with Steve Sexton on Facebook. Guest gift shows, the whole shot's right there. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on right now. Now, investors have long felt the two most important safe assets are gold and U.S. treasuries. But both have actually lost their investor money. And we can see this coming Monday because you're seeing what's happening to gold. It's leveling out right around $5,000 an ounce. Treasuries, you're starting to see people countries are moving away from the treasuries and buying gold and stuff like that, but you're seeing them go away. And if this is baffling, there's other news that snuck in under the radar due to the chaos. See, the supply manager survey. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's long been regarded as one of the better leading indicators in the economy. The survey offers an alarming signs of inflationary overheating. In particular, the number of complaining of higher prices leapt to a score that hasn't been that high since 2022. All this equals, this would really tend towards hurting bonds and causing yields to rise, okay? This makes the case for diminishing the odds of a federal rate cut, meaning you're likely to see your mortgage rates and things like that maybe fluctuate a little bit, but not go down significantly, especially in the case of buying bonds where people aren't. So it also reinforces that the use for things like bond replacements, gold replacements, especially under the times of the severe uncertainty, that'll protect your assets and still get a reasonable growth rate, okay? This is another reason why you wanna make sure you have guardrails on your portfolio, take small strategy adjustments, to make sure you're prepared for the good, the bad, and the uncertain, and make sure you also have a written exit plan, not to time the market or to deal with the headlines, to make sure your lifestyle stays intact as well as your assets. It's all about preserving your long-term assets. Folks, I want to thank you for joining us today on Saving with Steve. Look forward to speaking with you next time. Hope you have a wonderful week. With that, I'm going to let you go, and you have a wonderful day. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton.